Hi everyone,
I'm Andrew Kitley.
Please join me for brand new episodes on my podcast, The Invisible Gift, the show about turning neurodiversity into possibility. Hello and welcome to the Invisible Gift podcast with me, Andrew Kitley. Last week on the show, I sat down with Amy from Amy's Bakehouse, a luxury bakery based here in London. In our chat, Amy told about her experiences with neurodiversity growing up. Amy also explained why the hyperfocus she gets from ADD helped her start her thriving business. And she also reveals the journey behind her viral TikTok account. Make sure you go back and listen to that episode. This week on the show, I met founder and entrepreneur Tullis Matteson. Tullis Matteson is the managing director of the award-winning Stallion AI Services. Stallion AI Services is one of the most successful stallion collection centers in Europe. In 2020, Tullis established a charity called Nature Safe, which is Europe's only living biobank and is aimed at assisting in the conservation of the world's most rare and endangered species through regenerative cryopreservation. And in April 2022, he was honored with the Queen's Award for Enterprise for his excellence in innovation. In our chat, Tullis opens up about his difficult experience in education growing up. Tullis also explains why he sees dyslexia as the reason behind his excellent communication skills. And I ask him what cryopreservation really entails. But first, let's learn a bit more about Tullis and his own words. Enjoy. So thank you for coming on the podcast. Can you introduce yourself to the audience and tell them what neurodiversity you have?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me. It's a huge honour to come down here. My name's Tullis Matteson and I suffer from dyslexia.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your company and what you do?
I've got several companies. I've got one called Stallion AI Services. So I'm into cryopreservation. I've been freezing sperm samples down in the equine world. And we freeze them down and we ship them all over the world. And we've got another company called Gemini Genetics, where we freeze the cats, dogs and horses genetics down as well, so we can use those genetics in the future. Also got a charity called Nature Safe, where we can, you know, freeze tissue down from species that are about to go extinct. And hopefully we can bring those species back in 10, 20 or 30 years time. And we've got about 144 species already banked in just the last year. So yeah, it's all about cryobiology and how we can bring things back that are frozen down at minus 196.
So Tullis, where's that name come from? It's an interesting name.
Yeah, I think it originated from Scotland. It's a family name. It's always been a middle name and I've been given it as a first name. Yes, it's a bit unusual, so it makes you stand out a little bit more, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It was really funny. I didn't know if it was English or anything. So when I first heard your name, I was like, Tullis, I've never heard that name. Or I didn't even know it was a nickname, because I have had people on the show that's got like nicknames they use. And I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. I think one of the first ladies that climbed Mount Everest, I think she was called Tullis, I think. So it was normally as a surname rather than the first name.
So when did you find out you had dyslexia and how did that feel? What was that experience like?
I mean, my school days was when I realised I was different. And not because of my dyslexia. Well, I didn't know then it was dyslexia. Yeah. I was very lucky. I went to school with private education, but at the age of 8. And to me, it was one of the horrendous time because I was different. And actually my first school, believe it or not, was a Latin school.
Oh, wow.
Being Latin, or predominantly Latin school. I say it wasn't Latin school, but predominantly taught a lot of Latin there. You're going in that environment being dyslexic, you know, it's a double whammy. And it wasn't a good time, yeah, at all. So that's where I knew something, you know, I was different, but I didn't know. Yeah, of course you didn't know. Yeah.
No.
And it wasn't till the next school I went to that I went and had some tests done. And they said, yes, they think it's dyslexic, but I'm 54 now, and I think back then dyslexia was only just raising its head. So that was, yeah, it was a pretty tough time then. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I was diagnosed about 14 years after that, and even then they were saying it was really the first sort of I never really heard about dyslexia growing up. As I say, I think what we normally say is people my dad used to always say I was just being thick. Don't worry about it and stuff like that.
Well, that's what you were classed at school. Yeah. Thick and stupid. And of course you were a target then, weren't you? So it was dyslexia. It wasn't even known back then. So that's when it's the first sort of came to fruition, I suppose.
So when you said Latin school, what does that mean?
I say Latin school. They one of the main languages they taught there was Latin.
I think that's beautiful, though. I love Latin. Oh, not that I could do it, but I would. That's because my primary school, my headmaster was a Latin teacher. No, sorry, secondary school. So he was really keen to push into the school, but it had almost completely gone at the time. I mean, I think we had it in the first year or two, and then they got rid of it out of the school curriculum.
That's it. So the only thing I can still remember, it was drummed into us, it was saying grace, which was Benedictus, Benedicat for the Asian Christian, Domino Nostrum. I think that's the only thing I took out of school.
Oh, but see, that's beautiful, right? I just like the way you said it.
But God, those Latin lessons you used to dread, absolutely dread.
But it took someone a long time to explain to me. We was learning Latin language, but it was a dead language, so there's no way to use it. And I was like, I don't understand. Why are we learning a language that can't be used anymore? Yeah. Yet a lot of things we do, names and everything like that, it's still completely related to it. I still think so relevant to what we kind of how we talk and everything today. But
that's right. And that's it was no, you're right. And that's they were saying then there's some relevance between Latin and some of the language, especially the animals and the plants and things like that.
So did obviously when you found out you had dyslexia, did anyone make you feel comfortable with your dyslexia? Did you have anyone around you, family members or friends?
It depends what age, because start with it, you were just totally segregated. You were just so back then, no. I know parents, they sent me away to get this test done, and you were went to this house and you went through all these series of tests and writing and reading and whatever, and they came back and we think he's got dyslexia. Mm. But back then there wasn't much help at school for it. Mm. All they did, I think they gave you half an hour extra at the end of a lesson. Now, when like now I find it difficult even now to read and write. I can't really do that. But so when you're writing, you disguise your spelling because you don't write so well, so actually you finish the exams actually an awful lot quicker. You know, the extra half an hour didn't make any difference. Nowadays it's much, much more recognized, and the computers and everything else help so much better. But back then it was, I suppose they were still understanding it at the end of the day. So
it's funny, I always talk to people and they go, yeah, but it's so much better these days. Do you know what, from going around the country,
you don't think it is,
no. I don't think much.
I wouldn't know. Yeah.
I did think, I used to say the same thing, but now going around to schools, I think they realise there needs to be change, but I don't think they actually, I think it's still hard. I mean, I have a lot of kids to come up to me and just go, Andrew, having dyslexia is horrendous. And I'm like, it is. Mm. I was like, the problem is, I try not to glorify it on the show, but I always say the truth is at school, I hated having dyslexia. It's just as an adult, it doesn't really bother me anymore. I think because I know who I am. It does. And if people want to criticize me, I'm like, I don't mind.
Yeah, and I can see it. I had the fortune of getting an honorary doctorship this year at Nottingham Trent. And wow. I'd stand up and do a speech in front of the students. And I brought dyslexia really out into that. And it was amazing standing up with all the students all standing up. And I said, look, a lot of you may have suffered from dyslexia or learning difficulties. And I've always said that, you know, you've found it hard to get through. But I said, I promise you, at the end of it, I promise you, you'll come out a better person, you know, and you are special. And I said, you're all special with that. And I'm really trying to encompass it. And it was lovely. And I really focused a lot on dyslexia when I did my speech about that, because I know what I've been through. And it was fun. We went to after that, there was a sort of drinks. And the amount of students and parents came up to me, I'm an emotional person at the best of times, but you know, it really got my emotions going, because they came up and said, God, you really resonated with us. What, you know, about that, you know, my child, or the child came and said, yes, I suffer from dyslexia. And I said, never, ever be ashamed of talking about it, bringing it out into the open. Never, ever hide the fact that you've got dyslexia. Always think it's the positive. It's a great, I know it sounds, you're not going to believe me now, but I said it's a good thing to have, not a bad thing to have. In life, I believe you'll go even further because you've got dyslexia.
You say about you being emotional at best times. I'm like that. I'm terrible. I had a girl come up to me in one of the, we'd done our dyslexia workshops when we were going to schools, and she had to miss it because she had to go to a secondary school to view it. So she was gutted, and she was one of the dyslexic kids in the class. And she came up to me and she really got sad and teary and said, I've got dyslexia and I absolutely hate it. And I said to her, what do you love? And she was like, I love dancing. And I was like, well, do you know what? I said, there's this guy who sadly died. His name's Sir Ken Robertson. Mm. And he said that maybe you're meant to be a dancer. So maybe that's what you should go and do. And I said, look, school is made for certain people, just not you. You just need to put all your energy into the thing that you love doing and you think you're best at. And that's what changed it. And she got so emotional. And I was like, ooh,
and that's
tearing up.
Exactly what I said to the students. I said, if you've got passion, I'm a great believer, you can virtually not do absolutely obviously everything. If you want to become an astronaut, you might not. But I said, if you've got passion, you really, really want to do it, I'm a great believer, you can get there and you can achieve those goals. Yeah, and say I left school with zero, you know, 16 or 17, you know, with no qualifications at all. And the path that I led, you know, is I suppose through passion and what I enjoy doing. And
now you're getting an honorary doctorate.
I got an honorary doctorate last year, which was,
doesn't that feel nicer than earning it? I mean, earning it rather than gaining it, because then you're recognised by your peers, right? I think that's amazing.
Yes, it was. This year has been one of the best years of our life this year in many different aspects, because we won the Queen's Award this year as well, which for enterprise. And so with that this year, yes, getting the honorary doctorship was hugely humbling. It was just amazing to get it. So I haven't got any qualifications to have that now. It's brilliant. Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
So what's the most embarrassing story you have from your from having dyslexia?
Right, well, there's a couple. One was just fairly recently. There's a big horse show down the road from us, and I get on very well with the lady, and she put on a great event, and I just put something on Facebook. And that's why everybody says to me, stay away from Facebook, tell us, because I can't type. And of course, I'm going to get the wrong words. Mm. So instead of saying, I really appreciate you, Nina, I said, I'm really going to assassinate you. So I've got assassinate and appreciate totally the wrong way around. Because, you know, with dyslexia, when you look at something, and it's the same, I don't know, with myself, you quite often think, even though it's a different word, you're thinking in your head that is the right word.
Yeah.
And when you read it, so I'll read sentences out saying I miss out the not because I want it to say what I want it to say. And sometimes when people talk to me, I want to get what, you know, what I believe they're saying out of it rather than actually sometimes what they're saying. So that was one instance. The other one is slightly, I don't know whether you'd be able to put this on your show, this next one, but we are a horse reproduction centre.
Mm, yeah.
And we collect and freeze semen off horses, and that's one of our businesses, and ship it around the world.
Mm.
But one of our instances we had was a totally true story, this is that the local Whitchurch hospital is one digit different from our telephone number, and it happens quite oftenly that there someone will ring up wanting the local Whitchurch hospital, and instead of us, and we say it wrong. Anyway, this particular day, this one stallion with us, and he was called Roger, someone rang up from the Whitchurch hospital, and I was just sort of tunnel vision slightly, and they rang up and said, we're just ringing up to see how I thought they said Roger. Anyway, so I said, you can see where this is going now, can't you? I said, oh, Roger's doing really well, we've collected the semen off him this morning. his fertility looks really good, and I think the pregnancy results should be really good. His libido isn't the best, but we teased him up quite a bit, and this went on and on for a bit. Then there was silence at the end of the phone, and this lady said, "Pardon?" I said, "Yeah, well, the pregnancy results are going to be really good." And she said, "Roger." Roger Smith. And I said, no, Roger Stanley. He said, because I dropped my grandfather off yesterday at the Witcher station. I just want Witcher hospital. I want to know how he was getting on. totally got there. And that's just me sort of being blanket down and just sort of full beam ahead, given that full explanation without actually really trying to listen to the end of her question. So yes. So that was
There's no way that is not going on the podcast. That is the greatest story ever. I would love to hear that story from her point of view as well.
I know.
Can you imagine that, turning that around the dinner table? Yeah. You think your granddad's going to be impregnating someone?
He only went in for, I don't know, an ingrown tart. I can't exactly remember what the ailment was, but she said, she was,
Can you imagine her off the phone? Nan! They're collecting his semen! That is definitely a great story.
So that's one of the interesting ones, I should say. Yeah.
About your first one, it's actually really true. I have people say to me all the time, even though they know I'm dyslexic, why can't you just proofread things once you've written them? Why can't you proofread them? And I was like, I do, and it says exactly what I want it to say. I just can't see that it's wrong because my brain's filling it in exactly how I think it looks.
Well, it's lovely speaking to you because it's not often you get, you speak to others, that's exactly how I see it. You look at it as how you think it is written. It could have a whole lot of different words in there, but you still read it the same.
Mm.
And that's exactly it, yeah.
So would you say any having dyslexia has ever made you feel excluded?
Definitely in school. Yeah, so back then it was not good. Yeah,
I think the sense I got at school was it irritated me, angered me beyond belief that everyone found everything so easy and I found it hard. And in fact, that actually reflected all the way through uni. I remember, I've said this previously, but I remember sitting there and there was like 75 people in our uni class and they all found everything so easy.
Yeah.
It used to irritate the crap out of me. And then I remember we went on a geology trip and the stuff they thought was easy became hard because it was more practical, and same with the surveying course. So every time St. Moore hands-on came up, I excelled, but they couldn't even work it out. And I remember the real game changer for me, it was in my third year, and we was looking at British standards and stuff, which is not fun to read through and stuff, but it's easy. We need to check that something is in the British standards or Euro codes. It's like you just go, yep, that's it. But they couldn't do that, and it was really funny that the stuff I thought was really easy, and that made me realise at secondary, primary, and secondary school, I just was like, what is wrong with me?
You're right, and I remember at the age of 8, and I looked back at my kids. It was so didn't fit in that I actually ran away at the age of 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, getting up and you'd look at the kids now thinking, crikey, running away at the age of 8. And I remember going across this, to the other end of the town and eventually got picked up, because you're so different. So that's the sort of time, I suppose, that...
What I've seen now is, I didn't know this at the time, but there's always been dyslexia schools. I didn't know that. Not always, but in the last 25 years, there's been dyslexia schools scattered around the country. I'm now a governor of a dyslexia school.
Oh, right.
Moonhall School, which is an amazing school. And everyone in the school is dyslexic.
Wow.
And they teach completely different.
Wow.
You have the classes are really small. You have the amount of teachers to students is unbelievable. And I thought that was one of the only ones. See, this is the stuff you learn as you do the podcast.
Yeah.
But actually, there's loads around. There are not enough. There are a lot around the country. And I just can't help think how I would have probably flourished at a school like that. So when you go and talk about, they all know they've got dyslexia, and they know everyone's got dyslexia. Yeah. So there's no shyness about putting your hand up in classes and stuff like that and saying you need help. And anyone that falls behind is helped out of hours, and they'll use laptops because touch typing is so easy and stuff like that. And I'm like, wow, what would that education feel like?
Yeah, right? No, fascinated. That's great, that is. Yeah, they've got the... Yeah, I had heard that it was special schools, but
their grades just thrive. They do so well because it's just a different way of teaching. Yeah, they still do the same curriculum, just in a very different way. And they understand, because pretty much all the teachers are Senko trained. They understand that, like, sitting on balls and stuff like that to change up how people... It's just, I just sit there like, wow.
That's amazing.
That's great. And it is.
It's great. Yeah, it's great that they've got that good start in life that maybe you and I didn't get to the beginning, but it's great to see that, you know, that's been recognized, because it's so important. As I keep coming back, you know, you doing this and the invisible gift, and it really is, you know, it's the perfect title for it, you know, because dyslexia is something to be proud of, and I think people should have it, and having that first start of it, I think would be great to see how they get on as well, without having that good kickstart in life. Definitely.
So when did you feel most accepted for having dyslexia?
I suppose go back to today, this year, really. That was a pinnacle of standing in front of all those students at Nottingham in the hall and wearing the gown and everything like that, and getting that honorary doctorship for technology. I have to say, it was one of the pinnacles of my life, having no qualifications. And I do a lot of speaking and talking, and everybody have a bit of friendly banter, and we've had it before where they come back and say, well, Tullis hasn't sent his credentials in. And and we used to have something, somebody said, just put GAG after your name. And I said, what does that stand for? Good at gardening. And of course, okay. Because I talk a lot in the veterinary profession, you see, so on the veterinary wheel. So, and that's always been, so that they've really accepted me for being a non-vet, lecturing to veterinarians, for that's been great, really. But yeah, definitely this year, and getting that sort of award has been amazing, absolutely incredible, and I never ever take it for granted whatsoever, you know. It was great, really, so that's fantastic.
Yeah, like I said, being recognized by your peers would, I can see, being amazing. So would you say that your proudest moment is this year, or is there any other defining proud moment where you realised it was your dyslexia?
Yes, we've had some great achievements as a business, and so from the dyslexia side, it's hard to sort of, the lines are a little bit blurred for achievement-wise, for being dyslexic. I suppose, yes, it has to be getting that honorary doctorship, I think, this year. It has to be, because... having, say, zero qualifications, actually getting something with something behind it is a great sense of achievement, I suppose.
Which we're not, in the academic world, we're not really used to, right?
No, so totally not. Exactly.
You kind of look at it and go, oh, this is what people feel like school.
Yeah. So very much so. So that was, it was great. It really was.
I think it's really important to talk about actually the people who are behind you, because I do find I'm like, this podcast is a learning for me as well. And I've started listening to my podcast now. I never used to, but actually I've started now. And I keep on thinking, it's not really fair a lot of the time, because as you spoke to my assistant, Kate, who's unbelievable. Without her, I don't even think there'd be a business. And then my wife is the voice of reason beyond belief.
So no, you're right, and this team behind, you've got, I have an amazing wife and two fantastic kids, you know. And my wife, she's, without her, again, I wouldn't be able to do what I can do. I wouldn't be able to come down here today, and you know, and I have an amazing team, you know, I've got a Kate who manages everything for me. I've got Lucy who does all my presentations. I've got a Sue who's my PA and writes everything for me, does my emails. So it's, yeah, I go on and on about it. My team is what makes me look good. And and so I do sometimes generally feel a bit of a fraud when people stand up, because you've got to cater and all that, you know, and And they're the ones that sort of helped me put me on this pedestal slightly and achieve, I believe, some of the amazing stuff that we've done in the background. It's very much down to them, but I have an amazing team behind us, not just a managerial team, but also the team in the yard. You know, we've got somebody called EJ and Josh, and they're all dyslexic, but yet they're some of the best carers for on the horses and looking after that side that you'll ever want. And so, to me, yes, it's the team that has really enabled me to do and grow the businesses that we've done today, 100%, and that we've got behind me.
Well, everyone always compliments a podcast, and I'm like, I don't know if I can take much credit for it. I'm obviously love talking,
yeah,
but without the producers, it'd probably be a babbling. Well, it definitely would be a babbling mess. It wouldn't probably be. Yeah. It would be a bit of a nightmare. But I think it's really important that. I always say that I'm not really great at anything. I'm really great with people, and I like to gel people together.
Yeah, I don't know. I could be sitting in that chair. That's exactly. I love speaking to everybody as well. Yeah. I'm afraid I'm that annoying person that speaks to somebody on the tube next to me or on the train. I'm always that person in the cafe just a minute ago. I'll speak to that person. I am that person. So yes, I love talking to people. I love connecting people. But yes, so. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's probably good you don't live in London then, because you get arrested for talking to people, random people. Yes, yeah. I always said that. Me and my wife went up to Barnsley. I think it was Barnsley. Yeah. And we everywhere we went, people just spoke to us.
Yeah.
And we found it rude because we're both Londoners. Yeah, we found it so weird. And we was like, they've all been lovely. And we got called Duck and stuff like that. Yeah, I was like, what is this weirdness? And they were like, oh, you're definitely from London, aren't you? I was like, yeah, people down here, there's always that joke, isn't it? The police were called because this random northerner kept on talking to people.
Oh, that'd be me. Yeah. Everyone takes the mickey out of me. Where's Tullis gone? Oh, he's gone talking to some random stranger. I don't know. I always love to know what about other people's lives. It just intrigues me, you know, what other people do.
I always say that. I love talking to people I don't know.
Yes.
If I go somewhere and it's a party, I'm excited if I don't know anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's
always
great to meet different new people, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to know what they're doing. And I love all that side of it, yeah.
Yeah, must be the dyslexia side of us coming out.
Yes, it is.
I love speaking to Tullis because dyslexia seems to have such an impact on us in really similar ways. After meeting him, I can completely see why he's become such a successful businessman. And it doesn't surprise me that he has such a passion for charity, since he is such a people person. I love speaking to Tullis because dyslexia seems to have an impact on us in really similar ways. Coming up in the show, Tullis explains his charity, Nature Safe, and why it's absolutely crucial to fight premature animal extinction. And Tullis informs me about his adrenaline junkie side. But first, I want to see what Tullis sees as his invisible gift.
So what would you say your invisible gift is, and how is it related to your neurodiversity?
I think sort of the invisible gift is, you know, just really connecting with people, I'd like to think. I say really sort of, joining a good team together and having good people around you to the businesses. And when it comes to business sense, is thinking as a business structure in a slightly different way than a normal business structure might be. But I think, really, I enjoy connecting with like-minded people in business. And I think dyslexia may have helped me do that, because it's just a different way of we connect with people. So I suppose that's part of it. It's really that connection.
Yeah, you're definitely a very personal person. It's funny, when I sit here with people, I can always tell, like within a few minutes of meeting people, how they're going to be. And you're, funny enough, you're very similar to me.
I know, everything you're talking about, I could be sitting there. Yeah.
But I think it's clear that you enjoy talking to people, which is funny, because the one thing I assumed everyone was actually like me and you, who has dyslexia. But actually, they're not. There's some people that really struggle with the social side, but that's probably my key power, if anything. My gift is being able to talk to people and actually generally care what people are saying.
And finding that connection. I enjoy that, you know, seeing what connection, looking at people's lives, and you just never know where that connection may become in business or whatever it may be. So I enjoy that.
At work, one of my team was getting married and she invited the whole company.
Yeah.
At first I was like, oh my God, how am I going to have the whole company go away for a week? It's going to kill us. Yeah. But actually they all chipped in to work extra hours so we could all go, which was lovely. But there are some people that are very talkative in the company, but obviously a lot of engineers are quite introvert. Mm. And there's some people that I was thinking, oh, this is going to be interesting because I've really tried to break through their shells.
Yeah.
And actually we went away and it was the best thing we ever done because all the people I'd been dying to really get to know.
Yeah.
I really got to know them and I found out so much interesting stuff about them. And now I feel like we have such a deep connection in the office. And when I come in and talk to people, like, I generally care what they do in their lives. And I think a lot of people don't, but it's really, I love that connection part of it.
Yeah, and that connection, I mean, and setting up this charity called Nature Safe, that was bringing a lot of people together.
Mm.
And that was quite phenomenal, really, in the people that all came together. Again, it was another team effort. And that's something that's, you know, I really enjoy doing is getting all like-minded people to, you know, we set up one of the first ever living biobanks, you know, so we can freeze.
So what's the charity then?
Charity's called Nature Safe. So there's, by the time we finish this podcast, it's quite sad, really. There'd be another four species would have got extinct. You know, it's one every 15 minutes, roughly. And I'm into cryopreservation. So I freeze things down and bring them back to life. And that's where our business, usually horse semen and things like that. So I thought, well, if we can save a horse from, and a rare breed horses like the Suffolk Punch, where there's maybe only about 80 females left. I thought, right, let's see if we can use science and technology to preserve this breed. Mm. If we can save a Suffolk Punch, why can't we do the same to an elephant or a rhino? And so we looked into it more and realized that there are lots of biobanks out there, but there's not many living biobanks. So in your skin is all your DNA. So we can freeze that skin sample down and literally bring it back to life.
Wow.
This
sounds like Jurassic Park.
Everyone says that.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, but it's hopefully with a better ending.
Yeah.
So you're right. So we've frozen 144 different species down already in the last year.
Wow.
Year and a half, from southern white rhinos to Asian elephants to something called the mountain chicken frog, which you must probably never heard of, which are equally as important to the biodiversity of our planet. So, yeah, it's a great fulfillment. It really is.
Do you get much support from governments for that?
Well, we've been talking with governments at the moment, and I just had an email of some MPs just 2 days ago about that. So we are looking to get support, trying to. The door is ajar at the moment. We want to try and fling it open. So
it's just one of those things that you would assume, sitting here as someone that knows nothing, that people, that governments and everyone would just want that.
100%. And this could make the government look so good. And this is why we're knocking on the door. So you've got the Millennium Seed Bank down at Kew Gardens for storing all your seeds. But where's the stuff for the different species? So we can't build rainforests, but what we can do, we've got the technology to harvest and freeze down all these different species in time. Me and you are going to be all right, but it's our children's children, the ones that are going to suffer. They might not know what a rhino looks like. So this is for them, for the future. You know, this is very much for them. They're the ones that are going to be able to hopefully, you know, save our planet. And, you know, we've cocked it up slightly and just a bit, and hopefully they can do it. So yes, it's freezing these species down in time that they can be brought back to life in 10, 20, 30 or 100 years time. And yeah, this could make the government look amazing. Imagine if they say this is, you know, they're really getting behind this, they could look really good. So yes, it's something we're looking at.
Yeah. I think the governments would benefit from doing things, seeing the future benefit. So for instance, it won't help a government now, but in 25, 30 years, they go, well, actually, and someone goes, right, what are we doing about these species? Well, actually, the government 30 years ago put this into action, and this is a result. Then people go, holy crap, that's literally what we want. And that's so forward thinking. But we could go on about education. If the problem is, I find if government can't see it benefiting them in their lifetime within government, they're not really that interested.
And if they're going to COP26 or any of these, you know, conferences to go there to me and stand up saying, we're doing this, to me, it can make them look good as well in that sense. So we're not talking huge lots of money either. But yes, no, it would be lovely to get government on board, but we are knocking on that door.
I suppose it's not just one government, is it? It's got to be governments all around the world, right? The
kind of it is. And yes, we're talking to people all over the world, you know, in Kenya and South Africa, you know, and you know, all over, because we need these biobanks all over. It's not just the UK. So the zoos have been great, and Chester Zoo's been brilliant, you know. So yeah, no, that's it's a combination of huge efforts and, again, bringing people together.
Mm.
That's what it's all about, and that's what I enjoy doing. Yeah.
So you was talking about your gift earlier, your invisible gift, and obviously with all the charity and stuff like that, and it's doing really well. Is that how you use your invisible gift? Would you say your invisible gift is the thing that you use to progress your company?
I suppose never. I know this is going to sound a bit weird now, but I've never really looked at it that until I was looked into what you were doing and started looking into myself a little bit deeper, saying, you know, I know I've got dyslexia and I know I always say it's a gift, but why does that make me different? And actually, when I listen to some of your podcasts, I'm thinking, right, I maybe should, you know, obviously there is something different way. So I had to look, what am I doing differently? And I think if I'm looking out and looking back in to see me, what am I doing? And I think it is about connecting with people, being able to do that connection. And I think that's somebody else might say something totally different, to be fair, they might say. But to me, it's connecting people, bringing them together, trying to see the best in people. I really do, you know, try and see get the best out of people and see the best in people. And I enjoy doing that. And it's very heartwarming. And I love getting that warm feeling of doing something good. It's a bit like if you see a homeless person, for instance, you know, the reasons that you might go and get them a sandwich or something like that. And I was that person years ago that, you know, walked on the other side of the street and was worried it was going to get, and now you go up to them and say, do you want a sandwich or whatever it may be. And you're doing it for a couple of reasons. One is you really want to help that person, but you walk away feeling really uplifted. And that thing of helping the charity or helping someone or bringing someone in, I get a lot of self-worth out of that, I have to admit. I feel uplifted from connecting people or doing that. And I enjoy doing that.
It's interesting. I always say to people, there's no selfless act. And people are like, that's harsh because you do charity stuff. And it's like, I'm like, yeah. And do you know how good it makes me feel?
Exactly.
Like,
that's it.
There is yes, I'm doing a nice thing. Yes, yeah. I'm making things better for people, but it makes me feel amazing. I get dopamine hits and everything. It makes me feel really good. And do you know what? I think that stems back from when I was a child, where you felt so out of control with everything and you never knew how things are going to go. And now into a position where you can help other people, it makes you feel really good.
Yeah, it's getting that. And I went out to South Africa and we collected off about eight bull elephants, collected semen off these elephants. And that was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. I went out there as a cryo preservation, you know, side of it. And somebody said, when you're out there, have you ever been to South Africa?
No.
No, I've only been once. Mm. And they said, oh, it really get you. And I must admit, I was virtually in tears in the airport when I came back, because you felt so uplifted that you've done your little bit for conservation or help the world a little bit. And you're doing it for a couple of reasons, you know, and we froze down these semen off these elephants, and you came back, and it was the most amazing trip, one of the most amazing trips of my life. And I'm hopefully going back to do the rhinos again in July. And you're doing it because you want to do your bit, but you get those endorphins. The only other place I do a lot of skydiving.
Oh, wow.
and that's where I get my other endorphins from. So I've done sort of 1,600 skydives, and I must admit, when you jump out.
1,600?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, I used to do the camera work, so I used to jump out and have a camera on my head and film. Heard people doing a tandem skydive. Yeah, so I used to do that. I don't do as many now. I did one couple of weeks ago, but maybe the same sort of rush, it gives you that good feeling.
I used to do a lot of martial arts, and doing competitions was my buzz, and I used to love it. And I haven't done that since I was 31, so 8 years ago now, but I do miss it. I've got to try and find out now. I've kind of replaced it with weightlifting, which isn't really the same. Trying to beat the last thing you lifted is not the same as stepping on a mat to fight someone is probably my fun. But then I think that's also something to do with dyslexia. I always think I originally thought it was to do my ADHD, which was I needed to keep busy and moving all the time. But I think the good thing is if you really, you're always looking for that little dopamine hit because you chase the dragon, which is a drug, but generally you're like,
yeah. And I get it from, I enjoy that help. Yeah. That conservation side of it. God, you know, it's just the greatest reward. And I always say, you know, to people, if you ever get a chance of doing that, you know, it gives you so much back. It really does. So, I'm always saying, you know, it's a real positive thing to get to do something good like that because you get a hit yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife said sometimes I should rein it in because she said I would give my last pound to someone if I had the choice, and I really would. It's just, I do it with the team. A lot of the things I do in part, I'm like, oh, that probably wasn't the best business decision, but it made them really happy. I'm like, just. Yeah,
100%. That's it. And I must admit, yeah, exactly the same. Definitely. Yeah.
So has your invisible gift ever got you in trouble?
I can't really have to admit this. The most probably is, but I can't really, I must admit that's one of the questions I can't really.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I only know when, obviously we've just started doing this new format of the podcast and I was like, that's a tough question. But actually now I've done this question a few times, I thought about it and I thought the amount of times I've got in trouble because I always rely on my ability within dyslexia and ADHD to get me out of trouble because my ultra focus from my ADHD allows me to solve a lot, get things done quicker. And my dyslexia allows me to problem solve. I kind of rely on it. So I've done a lot of things like I've gone into a meeting, a very important meeting worth a lot of money and gone, I don't know anything about it. I haven't prepared properly, but I just deal with it. And I've walked in and it's just been a shambles. And what I've done is relied on the fact that I'm good with people. So it doesn't matter what happens, I will be able to make sure the people there like me, if I'm not even presenting. And then I've gone in and the people who I've met aren't friendly at all and really cold, which is not uncommon in my line of work. Sometimes you go in there and they're not that great. They're trying to almost intimidate you into a situation where, and I've gone in and because I'm not prepared, because I've relied on that last minute power that I have, and it's thrown me, and that's when it gets me in trouble. And that's happened, I think, twice, and now I ultra prepare for everything.
Yes, well, I suppose I ultra prepare for presentation, but I quite like a challenge as well. If somebody says you can't do something, I'm a great believer you can. And I love that, trying to turn that, win that person round.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy that. When somebody's really, really frosty, you're not going to win it all the time, but I actually get a kick out of it in a weird sort of way.
This is where we're so similar because I love people that don't like me because I know for a fact within 10 minutes of actually being around me, they will like me. And if they don't, it's just all the more exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, some of the things that just yesterday I sent an email. Well, I've also got a great PA who helps me out, but I've said the email address, and I quite often get names muddled up, and I sent quite an important email to the wrong person with the same first name.
Oh, yes.
And that happens, and I had to ring up and apologise. Those are a little, but that's the sort of thing, because you just straight away, oh, that's going there. So that happened only yesterday, actually. I had to sort of backtrack and ring a few people up and say, really, really sorry, it wasn't supposed to go to you. The person ring back and said, emailed me back and said, I don't think this email was meant for me. And I went, oh, really, really sorry. It's just, that's sometimes your mind just two steps ahead.
So my probably most embarrassing one was I sent, in my first job working in an office, I was typing in someone's name. Instead of typing, I think the name was Andy, I typed in all.
Right. Ah, so everyone got it.
Yeah, but I was supposed to be typing in my wife's name because I was doing this test to see if you could call back emails because I read that you could call back emails.
Right.
In which you can, but you don't call them back. It just says, don't read this email or something ridiculous. Anyway, I tried it, but I'd done it on I was sending it to her to test it, but at the bottom of the email was a conversation we were having during the day, and it was just around Halloween, and we were going to a fancy dress stuff. So we were talking about what we were going to wear, and she put some comments about wearing like I think it was like a sexy dead devil outfit. And I was making some comments, basically shouldn't have been a work email. But anyway, so we just to say things, I forwarded that email to test this new thing. But instead of putting a name, I put all
everyone.
So it went to over 100 people. in the company, and all I saw, my phone just started buzzing. People were sending like laughing faces and everything. And
it's
I was
like Malcolm McIntyre sent to all thing. Yeah.
Yes, it was exactly like that. And my boss at the time, in not particularly the most understanding person, he would have probably gone mad. And I went up and I thought, I better just go and tell him. And I walked up and he weren't in. And one of the directors come out. She was lovely. She said, don't worry, all his emails go through me. I deleted it. He won't
brilliant.
See it.
And I was somebody like, had you back there, though.
And then she ripped into me about how embarrassing that was. It took me months to live that down.
Yeah, and so that's, I wouldn't say it's confident. You'd be dead right. That's the sort of thing that you do. And sometimes, whether it's dyslexia or not, you know, I use dyslexia as I said it yesterday to the lady. I said, sorry, I'm dyslexic. So I use it as a bit of an excuse in the background. And I use that, I play that dyslexia card every now and again if I do cock up, basically, and say, look, I'm afraid it is my dyslexia sometimes. But yeah, that was just yesterday, really, sent it to the wrong person. But, and it, yeah, it wasn't too bad. So, yeah.
Well, the question I keep asking myself now, and me and James, the producer, talk about this all the time. Actually, some of the stuff we talk about might just be us. It might be nothing to do with our neurodiversity, but you don't know, because everyone that comes on the show says the same sort of things and you think, well, actually, they do relate, but you don't know. Yeah. And, you know, if we could just flick it off for a few weeks,
yes.
You'd probably neurodiversity.
Yeah, you could flick a switch and say, right, yeah.
I said the annoying thing is I can do it. I can flick that switch in ADHD, but you can't do it in dyslexia. So because ADHD... you can take medication to try to see the difference. And I was dead against it before. And the more and more I speak to people about it, they're like, some people say it destroyed their life. Other people said it's amazing for them. But either way, I said I was going to test it for the podcast and see how it goes.
Right.
And tell everyone like how I felt about it. Because we had a video on TikTok go viral because I said I didn't think ADHD medication was a good route, because I used to teach martial arts and some of the kids I taught was on it, and they were like, they become very strange on it, like they're very locked in themselves, they weren't as expressionate as they used to be such great characters. But I got absolutely attacked, and not in a bad way, you know. At first all the bad comments come out the woodwork, and then loads of people come and said, actually, I've had that with my children. I've noticed this. But what I've realized is actually talking to adults and children, it works differently for each person. But it would be interesting to see the difference, because as I get older, I realize my ADHD causes me more problems than my dyslexia.
Right.
Because, for instance, I come up with a billion ideas, but trying to get from point A to B with that idea, I can come up with, I know how to do it, I can put everything in place, but it's actually putting it from A to B is a nightmare. So the only way I can solve that, which is very costly for me, is then getting someone who I align with, who I trust to take it from A to B.
Yeah, so I was coming up with that in my phone, even in the middle of the night, because my brain's always seems to be ticking along, is that I have a list and I write all these things down. So at like 3 o'clock in the morning, I come up with these ideas, and I've got like 300 ideas now on my phone that I come up with, just things that I've got to do or ideas and whatever. So I must admit, you're always thinking about new things and trying to progress. It's the time.
I think it's the problem. That's the thing I love about dyslexia, is the problem solving. I love problems. I absolutely love them. So that's what really interesting, when we go around the schools, we do, one of the things we do is, we do a business plan, and they have to come up with new ideas around, we give them concepts like a new app or something like that they've got to come up with, and then they do it, but they always come to me with problems, and I love solving them. And when I solve them, they're like, oh my God, like, because they're new ideas every time, they're never the same idea. I absolutely love that.
The kids thing, I must admit, is I find so rewarding. And it's a place that I've only just started lecturing to schools and assemblies.
Yeah.
I've got two or three more to do in January and another one. So they're coming more and more, but it's great to get them engaged. It really is.
It's also how different they all are.
Yeah, I went to this one and I said, does anybody know what cryopreservation is? And this little boy at the front put his hand up and he said, oh, and he must have been only about 11. He said, it's about freezing things down and bringing them back. And it just made my heart melt. I thought, wow, that is just incredible. And And to me, obviously on conservation, it's so important to get the younger generation involved. And they're much more into conservation than ever we were, obviously, you know. And it's so it's great to get them inspired on that side of it. And yeah, and I must admit, every time, I wouldn't say every time, but virtually 90% of the time I do presentations, I always bring my education into it and where I've come from and where I'm going, because if I can just give someone a bit more hope on the dyslexia side or that side of it, and give them that sort of feel that they can do it, even if they might have some learning difficulties, and if they do feel that they are slightly different, it's actually a gift that they've got, and they might not see it now, but in the future, they've really got something very special. Really special.
Well, it's really interesting for us because at the beginning of the assembly, we asked people what they know about dyslexia, and this one girl stood up a few weeks ago and just went, it's the ability to think differently from everyone else, and that makes us great at what we do. And we was like, woof! I was like, that's just made me tear up.
Wow, but how old was she?
I think she was 9. But that, amazing. But her parents were dyslexic, so they'd obviously brought her up to believe that they were both business owners and really successful.
Yeah.
So it was like, wow, that's amazing.
Incredible. Yeah.
They always say stuff that gets me. Really, bloody kids.
Yeah. It is.
Do you know what I find? I always say with the team, because we go around, me, Paloma, Jordan and Maisie, and I always say, it's really funny, all kids at that age, all of them, are amazing. They're always got great ideas, interesting. I was like, what the hell do we do to them from that age onwards?
Yeah.
Because when they come into the work world, they are cynical, unhappy. Yeah. I was like, what happens in that space?
Yes.
Wow.
Because, yes, that sort of young teenage years, when they're so enthusiastic about it, aren't they? Yeah.
What advice would you give to other neurodivergents to find their gift?
I think you've really got to go with your heart sometimes as well, and if you're passionate about something and you really, really, really want it, no matter how many people might say you're not clever enough or whatever they may be saying to you, because that's obviously what I got at school. They said, you're never going to do anything. You'd never, you know, they really sort of put you down. Believe in yourself, and having the invisible gift, it really is a gift. And one day, it will suddenly come out at you, and you'll be look back like I look back now, just coming on this. Wow, you know what I've been very fortunate to achieve over the years. And I think it's down to the invisible gift. You know, a lot of it's down to that, and obviously the people around me. So never be afraid to push those boundaries. Never be afraid to go down the road where you get a dead end as well, because you learn so much from that when you go out there. You know, we get a lot of knockbacks. But never take that as a failure or disappointment. Take that as a plus. Right, that didn't work. Let's try down another route. And if you do think slightly differently, I promise you, you will get there. You will get there. It's just having the belief in yourself. And I'm a great believer. You really believe in yourself, and you really want to. You can achieve some amazing, absolutely amazing things. And this invisible gift, it really is a gift. It will come to fruition one day. It really will.
I think that's great advice. And I always say, the one thing I've learned to say now is, as much as parents have your best intentions at heart, also take their advice with a pinch of salt. Because as a new parent, I know I've found myself saying stuff to my 13-month-old or 14-month-old, sorry. I'm thinking, why have I said that? That's the sort of thing my mum and dad would have said. But the thing is, I think parents care a lot, but actually, and they want you to be safe and comfortable and happy, but sometimes you've got to find your way yourself.
You have, and you find that path. And quite often it's the path that you're not really expecting. I never knew I was going to be into sort of the reproduction, animal reproduction side. I never knew I was going to start doing this. And everyone looks at me, did you ever think you'd be doing what you're doing now? And I said, never. So, and I'm great. You've got to grab those opportunities that are put in front of you as well. Yeah, never be afraid to sort of just go outside your comfort zone a little bit. And I think nowadays, you know, is speaking to those people, you never know who you're going to be speaking to. You never know where that's going to lead you to. So I think that's really important. I think being dyslexic or having that, you know, that invisible gift can actually maybe propel you into a direction that you never thought in a positive way.
Amazing. Where can people find more out about you? if they wanted to know more about you or contact you, where can they find you?
We're all over on the internet. We've got Stallion AI Services, which is our company. We've got various companies, one called Gemini Genetics, which is a pet tissue banking company as well, and Nature Safe, which is naturesafe.com as well. So you just have to type it in and come. So yeah, if anybody out there has got dyslexia or want helps or want a leg up or chat, say I would love to hear from you 100%, I really would. And I say if we can just inspire a few people in what you're doing with this podcast, I think it's fantastic, because it just hopefully gives people a bit more hope, because some people do feel a bit closed in sometimes when they got this and they can't shout about it. And I think we've got to reach out. So our doors are always open 100%.
Amazing. Thank you for coming on the show.
No, well, thank you. It's been great. It really has.
Well, we've reached the end of the podcast today. Thank you so much, Tullis, for coming on the show. Your story is really inspiring, and I love how much you fly the flag for neurodiversity. To learn more about Tullis and Nature Safe, visit their website, www.natures-safe.com. And thank you all at home for listening. Next week on the podcast, I speak with author and illustrator Tom McLaughlin. In the show, Tom opens up about how he overcame his struggles with dyslexia to become an award-winning writer. Tom also shares some of his most embarrassing stories from his neurodiversity and what advice he had for others in how they too can find their invisible gift. It's a great conversation, so we'll see you there. Just a couple of quick notes before we go. They're important ones. First off, make sure to subscribe to The Invisible Gift wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can automatically be notified about new episodes. You've been listening to The Invisible Gift podcast, presented by me, Andrew Kitley, and produced by One Fine Play. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kazra is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Special thanks to Christina, Izzy, Maisie, Jordan and Kate, and the Cube Studios. Thank you for listening to the Invisible Gift podcast.